on this Monday edition of the Hagmann Report. Jake Morfonius is going to be joining us for part two of an interview that we started with him just a few shows ago. That was really well, and he's got a great YouTube channel, the End Times News Report, that he's been looking hard at Las Vegas and other important issues, and we're going to jump into that part two interview with him in just a moment. A few things. First, we have what we proposed at the beginning or the end of the last hour, the presidential executive orders. Have they been challenged in courts? I found an interesting article, and John's found some interesting information that this article details what has happened with the Trump presidency, but this says it's historically infrequent when you see executive orders being revoked within the same presidential term, as we've seen this with Trump's immigration order that has been since reversed and put into place. And there are other examples throughout history where, and you gave a great one, John, during the break to me, where we've seen executive orders become revoked or invalidated through other branches of the government. Why don't you get into the example you told me, because that's a good one. I've never heard that before.
It is a good one, and it escaped me as well, even though I'm very much a student of this era of United States history. In 1933, in his first term, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was facing the outset of the Great Depression, jobless numbers through the roof, soup lines in every major metropolitan area, he cooked up the idea that number of Supreme Court justices on the Supreme Court from the traditional 9 to 15. And I'd forgotten about that, Joe. And of course, he wanted to do so that as the current sitting president, he could pack the House with 6 more very liberal progressive judges. But the Supreme Court shot that down and said, thank you, but no thank you. The other thing I'd like to mention quickly, and this is just from Wikipedia, but I didn't want to leave it dangling. It was President Andrew Jackson who famously made that quote about the Supreme Court making their decision. Now let them enforce it. And that was to Supreme Court Chief Justice John Marshall. And the case was Worcester versus Georgia. And without getting too deep in the weeds, it was a case about Native Americans and Native American empowerment on their land versus federal authority on Native American land as well. And it looks like a pretty interesting case. And that was, again, during the presidency of Andrew Jackson. And he also said to John Marshall, quote, John Marshall has made his decision, now let him enforce it. And the decision of the Supreme Court has fell stillborn. Definitely a cantankerous president in Andrew Jackson, and just a little bit of fun history there.
Yeah, and it's interesting because these executive orders are crafted with legal teams and advisors. So they look at the law, they look at different things. When they put them out, they believe that they're going to be upheld. And this article from Heritage says it makes an example of one of President Clinton's executive orders that the president's authority to issue such directives was struck down by one of the courts reacting to the validity of one of the directives that Bill Clinton issued. So I didn't know that. I guess for most presidents, you're going to get some pushback to the executive orders, and sometimes they will strike them down. With that, we have our guest with us, Jake Morfonius. He is the head of the YouTube channel, the End Times News Report, and he's done a great job in a number of investigations. Specifically, what I've been focused on in his reporting is the continuous coverage on Las Vegas. And we had Jake on last week or a few weeks ago, and it was a great interview, so we're going to do this again. Jake, welcome back to the show.
Hey, very good to be back with you.
Well, it's great to have you. I've seen you've put out since the last time you were on a number of interesting videos, one dealing with the Jerusalem issue, and then you have a number of issues on Las Vegas. I want to open with asking you this. I see you had some issue on YouTube with some of your comments or the comments of users to your video being censored. What happened with that?
Which video? I have so much censorship going on.
Current leads in Las Vegas shooting investigation. Over 100 comments were posted by viewers on this video, but on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah, you can see a whole lot of different viewers are posting comments saying, why aren't my comments showing up? For the first hour that video went up, YouTube, even though everything was supposed to be public, they held everybody's comments on that tons of people were leaving comments. I tried it myself. I actually did a screen capture of me trying to leave a comment on my own channel, let you leave a comment, but then everything would disappear. So there are, I don't even know what the comments were that are gone, but YouTube hid them even from me, so we can't see them.
How much, you said that you deal with a lot of censorship issues. What are some of the other things that you come across on YouTube? And I'm sure some of our stories are similar. The demonetization, the attempted copyright infringements that sometimes have no basis in reality. What else have they been doing with your videos?
Well, it's just a nonstop thing. My first channel back in 2014, I used to do work on clandestine CIA operations, mostly things going on in Ukraine and Syria. That one, in the space of about 48 hours, they just hit me, bam, 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 with a bunch of strikes all at once before I could respond or appeal or do anything, and just took the whole channel down. This one, they have done something similar. They didn't do them so compact, but I got, as I started doing the Las Vegas investigation, got a couple strikes. One was big enough that USA Today got in touch with me to get my comment on it. Because I was talking about the Vegas investigation. Nothing at all. I'm very familiar with what YouTube's community standards are, and I abide by them. It's their platform, their rules, so I'll abide by it. But I knew that nothing in my video was contrary. The problem was that I was getting more views than CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, all the mainstream media outlets. I mean, we were getting millions of views on one video in particular, and so they couldn't shut it up, so they just deleted it and gave me a community standard strike. So that had been mentioned by Wall Street Journal that happened, but they were kind of ambivalent. They didn't really see it as a, you know, one way or another, because I'm fake news to the Wall Street Journal. But USA Today picked up on it, and I guess they had been already working on a piece. BuzzFeed News also contacted me about it. And word got out, and so without any explanation, YouTube reinstated that video. The video, though, again, when you have millions of monetized views, and that video, I don't know why, but that one had been monetized. Most of my videos are demonetized. That one, though, had millions of views before they pulled it. So when they ended up about a week later restoring that video and removing the strike, they left out one thing, and that was restoring the income I would have earned from it. And so I'm in an ongoing dispute. It's been a couple months now, trying to get them to deal with that. But it's just outright, they do blacklist certain channels. They'll suppress content. Anything controversial, of course, is difficult. But you mentioned that Israel interview video I did a couple of days ago. It was just talking about the controversial issue of President Trump acknowledging Jerusalem as the capital. And so all I'm doing is what we're doing here. I just talked, and YouTube put an adult restriction on it that no one under 18 years old can see that content, you know, because we don't want teenagers learning to think for themselves and hearing different sides of an issue. So it's constant. And in my channel, I've got about 115,000 subscribers, and in the first 24 hours, I'm lucky to get 2,000 views on a video. These days, it's just, they blacklist so that when you look at your internal analytics on YouTube, you can kind of see your who's viewing, what the audiences are, where it is. Of the total views that I do get, less than a quarter of them come from my own subscribers, because my own subscribers don't see. They don't get any notifications. My videos don't get put in their feeds. So it's, YouTube's a monopoly, so they get to do what they want, it seems.
Yeah, that's very true. And we've been dealing, you know, as any Christian or conservative outlet on YouTube has been dealing with the same issues that you just outlined. Real quick, and then we can jump into some more news. I want to ask you, do you have any positive or close alternatives to YouTube that you would use if you ever had to make that switch?
Well, I had been trying to build up a presence on VidMe, and then we just found out VidMe announced a couple of weeks ago, actually a couple of days back, that they are shutting down as of tomorrow. So it's back to square one. BidMe is no longer going to be a viable option. So the next thing I'm looking at is you can't upload directly to Steemit, but you can, I guess, cross-reference over to it, post the links. But as far as the next platform that I try on, it's going to be BitChute. I'm getting that started now. It's hard to find a place that can host, you know, these videos, this volume. I've got, you know, 1,500 videos. A place that's willing to host it without charging you a lot of money and not censoring. That's the next thing. Is there are some other platforms out there where you can post videos to Facebook if you want, but that doesn't mean that they'll be seen. The problem is finding some place that's two things. One, that's open enough to letting you say what you want without trying to censor you. And the other thing is it not being too seedy, because of course when there's unrestricted ability to post, you do get some content that people are going to avoid. So that's the challenge. I'm going to give it a shot with BitChute.
Okay, interesting.
Hey, Jake, John Robertson filling in this evening for Doug Hagman.
Hey,
it's,
John.
It's great to work with you. I know we had a great conversation offline last week, and I don't mind telling you I was furiously scribbling notes as you and I really kind of bounced all over the news cycle, the landscape last week. And thank you again for such a great part one with us. And I'll share this with the listeners and viewers before we jump in. It's very rare I will do this, but I was so enthralled with Jake's first visit with us that, what was it, Jake, about 5 minutes after you went off air, you got a text from me saying, you know, how about December 11th? You know, let's get you back in right away. For we can cover whatever you like this evening, but certainly to extrapolate a bit more, you were just starting to cook on the whole Las Vegas thing. Now, Jake, I'll make this statement and I'll pass it back to you, and perhaps we can ease into some of the big questions that are certainly on your YouTube channel as well as your Twitter feed. And our listeners and viewers can follow Jake on Twitter at Morphonious. That's at MORPHONIOS. Great Twitter feed. We all follow Jake. Jake, we are clearly, to borrow from Alex Jones, we are in an information war here. We're in an info war. And ever since the new media Trojan horsed the fake stream media with the election of President Donald Trump, it's payback time. And that's what we're all suffering to one degree or another. And we're suffering in the free market of ideas. If we cannot present our investigative findings, if we can't bring our reports and bring this information to the public, then we don't really lose in the court of public opinion. We're not in the court of public opinion. And when we look at something like Las Vegas, it's been about 2.5 months now, Jake. The biggest mass casualty event in U.S. history. We all agree on that. And the part that really just shakes me to my core is that the American public as a whole, not everyone, certainly not our viewers and listeners and not yours either, they just blindly accepted the idea that the investigative findings would be no investigative findings. And, you know, you have just been, you've been tenacious, you've been a bulldog, doing what I like to call frontline reporting. What I mean by that, the listeners and viewers, is Jake Morphonious, End Times News Report, does not parrot other investigative journalists, citizen journalists. He gets on the phone, he gets in the car, he goes out and gets first person, single source information from people who were there. And that's one of the reasons we appreciate you so much. So, Jake, let's segue into Las Vegas. Let's push back a little bit in this info war tonight. Tiger Swan. Let's just jump right in the deep end. Tiger Swan, you've got an appeal out to your followers on Twitter as well as front and center on your YouTube channel. Let's talk a little bit about Tiger Swan. What is it and how does it play in? I'm just going to pass it to you and let's roll.
All right. Sure. Thanks, John. So we have established this much. We do have very good reason to believe, from multiple, I mean many witnesses. I have personally spoken with, I'd say, 7 or 8 people now who have said they would bet their lives on it, that there were multiple gunmen. The question is, who was it? Who were these mercenaries? Was it an outfit that was domestic? Was it, you know, Saudi intelligence that came in? Who were these mercenaries involved? And so we're trying to find that out based on look at all these breadcrumbs that were left. And it's tough. It's not easy. There's no smoking gun. So we look at these different things. Now I'll say I, speaking of breadcrumbs, someone sent me something that was unusual. It stood out. I get tips all day long, every day from viewers, from other people that follow. A lot of them are things I already know or I've already looked at. A lot of repetition. People maybe coming across something that I had discussed previously for the first time themselves. But every now and then I get something that just drops my jaw because it's something brand new and there is meat to it. So I got some information earlier today, about tiger swan. Tiger swan is there. If anyone knows what black water is, tiger swan is essentially the same thing. Black water was based in, out on the coast of North Carolina, kind of just below, Norfolk, Virginia, out in the swamplands out there, out east. This other group called tiger swan, they're smaller than what Blackwater was. But they've still got hundreds of contractors that they use here in the United States. Tiger swan is based in Apex, North Carolina. And, tiger swan is not above doing operations against U.S. citizens. In fact, they got in trouble a little bit back during the Dakota Access Pipeline protesting that was going on, the different people that were showing up out there. Well, Tiger Swan had a contract to take their people, infiltrate these. I hate to call them protesters. People don't like that phrase, but I mean no offense by it, but the protesters that are there, infiltrated them, embedded themselves among them, just like I saw happen back during the Malheur Wildlife Refuge occupation and the Bundy Ranch standoff, all that same MO. You get these people that embed themselves. Well, not only that, but they had to have permission to be doing certain kinds of surveillance in the state. The state declined their application to be able to do this work, but they did it anyway. And so what Tiger Swan got in trouble for was for taking helicopters in, doing aerial surveillance on these different protest groups. They were doing daily intel reports based on that evidence they were gaining, and then they were passing it over to the FBI. And the FBI would then use it. That way the FBI can say, yeah, we weren't violating anyone's rights. Wasn't us. But that's what was going on. Now, because this is so fresh, this information I got about Tiger Swan, I haven't had a whole lot of time to vet and look through it. So in my haste, because I had to run out to do a different interview this evening, I just put out a quick video to my audience saying, help me look. I did a little research on my own. I saw, there's some stuff here. Possible that Tiger Swan had some role there in Las Vegas. But I made it clear, I don't know at this point. This is just something I want to look into. So I put out a request to viewers to do a little research and collaborate with me on it and pass along anything, if they find any evidence or know of anyone associated with Tiger Swan that may have been involved in any kind of recon or any kind of work there in Vegas in that time period around it. Now, I can't link Tiger Swan directly yet. I do have some information on some of the folks who I believe were part of the mercenary team, flight records. I don't have a whole lot on them yet beyond that, but we're getting closer. I can say that much. We're getting closer.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've been uncovering stuff that nobody else has been able to find. And I see, the one video I haven't watched here, this is the last two that you did, rare footage of gunfire on Route 91 concert. That's a video that has not been circulating before?
Not much. I found it on a kind of an obscure channel that had, I don't know where they got it from, but there were only like 40 views or so on this footage. And it's actually three different clips that I put into one video, but the main clip is footage from some of the folks that were there at the concert during the shooting. They're up at stage left, which if you're in the audience facing the stage, then that's to your right. Mm-hmm. So these are people up toward the front. And in the footage, you do see some things that I don't think have been shown in some of the other footage that's out there. It's at least a close-up point of view. And what you see in the video footage is the gunshots start, talking about the main volley that you hear. And as Jason Aldean runs off stage, what you can see in the foreground of the video between the person with the cell phone and the stage, you can see a man in a ball cap turning and looking toward the stage and waving security over, because security had been over there, CSS security. So some of these security guys start coming forward to see what's going on, because there's someone that's been shot right there. So they're waving people over. Some of the people right there in that area are starting to tend to the gunshot victim. That's when the second round of gunfire came off. And then when that ends, there's someone else that has just been shot. And you can hear the person in the video saying, "I can't feel my legs anymore. I can't feel my legs anymore." And so they're talking about calling for 911. One of the security guards crawls over the barricade to try and get in and help the wounded. And then the third volley starts. And at that point, the person's cell phone goes down where you can't see anything, but you can still hear the audio. And it's just terrifying. I absolutely reject the idea that is peddled out there that this whole thing was a hoax, that everybody involved were a bunch of crisis actors, that nobody was shot. Doggone it, folks. I mean, there is so much evidence that people were shot and killed and shot, wounded. And we've got photos of gunshot victims in the hospitals that are available out there. There's tons of information. I've interviewed people that have family members that were shot. So I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if the whole, there's so many people that continue to perpetuate this myth that no gunshots actually fired. It was either speakers, mm-hmm. And sounds and everything else. Makes you wonder if it's not disinformation to make the, you know, the truth community look like a bunch of morons.
Oh, it is.
Really, it does make us look like idiots when the prevailing, and the mainstream media picks up on this and they repeat it. Oh, look what they're saying. You know, they don't talk about the things I talk about, you know, where we've got some real substantive, clues to follow, real things that we can verify and validate. No, they go and they pull these guys that say it's all fake and there was nothing happening. And those are the ones that get highlighted. So they're definitely these folks that talk like this, they're being, whether they're totally innocent and they don't mean any offense by it, doesn't matter. They're being weaponized against the rest of the truth community.
Absolutely, Jake. What's happening is a very small percentage of people who are essentially parroting other platforms, throwing in a dash of imaginative research, etc., are then being amplified by the mainstream media to make the new media, the truth movement, the patriot movement, what have you, look disingenuous in the least and incompetent at worst. Jake, let's switch gears here momentarily. Over the weekend, I did quite a bit of research and I did watch a number of your videos, in anticipation for the interview tonight. However, I had no idea that I would actually be participating in it. There, in my opinion, going all the way back to the original, police scanner recordings, the majority of which are still available to be, listened to, audited by our listeners. They're all over YouTube. Jake, is multiple reports of multiple shooters and or projectiles coming into Bellagio. There certainly seems to be a lot of evidence based on the stampede alone, the New York, New York, Aria, Tropicana. Jake, break this down for us a little bit, if you would, and we'll kind of pick up where we left off last time you joined us. In your opinion, multiple shooter teams at these different locales, or is this the fog of war on the day with Las Vegas Metro PD doing their level best to disseminate information but getting false alarms via 911?
I'm a very open-minded person. I'll accept whatever turns out to be Correct. And so when early on in the investigation, I didn't have any. I heard some reports, people saying multiple shooters, and my first guess was, you know, fog of war, confusion, echoes that are being picked up, people, you know, panicked. And so I was completely open to the possibility that, you know, it was a lone gunman. Because not everything out there is a conspiracy theory. Sometimes things are just as simple as what the real story is. Not always, but sometimes. But as I spoke with these witnesses and we dug in, there's just no question that there were multiple gunmen. The question that I have at this point, the only part of this that I'm uncertain about, is whether or not there were live rounds that were being fired. If these were blanks, if they were live rounds, were they purposely shooting them into the air just to cause panic instead of trying to shoot people? Because we don't have much of anything to go on as far as you know, bodies or people being shot in different locations. That's the part that causes everything to sound like a conspiracy theory. Because if you've got a shooter down at, say, the Bellagio, and people are running because they, you know, there's the broken glass and the shooting and everything, well, who got shot? Where are the bullet holes in the walls? And so in speaking with Renee Downs, who was one of the ladies, the earliest on, the most prominent voice talking about the Bellagio and what she observed with the panic and everything, because she was in the Petrosian lounge and all these people come. She heard the gunshots just right past where she was. And people really challenged her on that, said, well, where's the evidence? But then I had among the witnesses I spoke to were three men who had been staying at the Delano Hotel. And they talked to me about some of what they witnessed. And it was very, very similar to what Renee was saying happened down at the Bellagio. And also what Aurora Monroe said. She was down at Planet Hollywood and had a similar experience there. And so these men at the Delano, what they observed was a couple things. One, all three of them, independent of each other, because I interviewed them separately, all three of them said that inside the Delano, they had a very, very strong odor of gunpowder. Two of the men are gun enthusiasts. They know what it smells like. They didn't see bullet holes or anything like that, but they were certain that something was being fired off. They saw the panicked crowds running. There were four of them. The fourth one didn't want to do the interview with me, but three of them went down the hallway, and as they were going down this hallway, this is the corridor that leads between the Delano Hotel over to, you've got the Delano Hotel, the Mandalay Bay Hotel, and in between is a complex, a two-story complex. There's the Michael Jackson One Theater. There's the sport book area, shops up top. Anyway, in this casino area, there was a SWAT team that came through. And as they were coming through, there were gunshots. And we've got some audio evidence of these gunshots, which I've put on my channel. We've got the testimony from the men. There is one video that I've not been allowed by the video owner to put out that actually is a little more clear than some of the other material I've put out. So I can say that what they're saying matches up very much with what Renee was saying about the Bellagio, what Aurora Monroe was saying. There were multiple people there. I spoke my first night in Las Vegas when I went out there to investigate. The very first police officer that I spoke to told me that it was this officer's opinion, and this is before Sheriff Lombardo really cracked down on the officers about them talking to independent media. What this officer told me is that the general sense of the Vegas PD, that the people, just the average police officers, was that there were multiple shooters. The question is what were they doing? This officer's opinion was that they were trying to lure the officers away from Mandalay Bay with all these false reports. But also there was some speculation that the goal was to try and gather them together in groups and potentially shoot at the police officers as they showed up. At least that's that's what you don't hear on the scanners is that communication going on between some of the teams of police officers as they're moving around to these different hotels. So even the police believe that there were not just hoaxes being called in, but there were people trying to distract, trying to cause confusion. It seems like the operation was supposed to have gone on much longer than it did, and what happened at the Mandalay Bay ended up ending sooner than had been anticipated. Remember, up there in the hotel, whether you want to say it was Paddock or someone else, whoever was up on that 32nd floor had only gone through 1,000 out of 5,000 rounds of ammo that was in the room. That's the claim. Of course, we can ask where all the shell casings are and everything like that, that aren't really showing in the crime scene photos, but still, this was going to be a bigger operation, and something caused it to end earlier than they had anticipated. What it seems to be is that these others that were still operating, the gunfire down at the Bellagio, that wasn't until around 11:15, between 11:15 to 11:25 in that area. It's also the same time that Aurora Monroe talked about it. That's the time that we hear on the police scanner that matches up as far as the time frame. So these things are happening well after they already know that there's no more gunfire coming from the Mandalay Bay. So seems like the operation was still ongoing. Otherwise, what were they doing? Why would they go down there and shoot at these other hotels?
Yeah, and you know, you made some great points. And one of the things that I want to make sure we hit on is the police scanner that happened on October 1st. And you guys can go out there, listeners can go out there. If you haven't heard it, or if it's been a while since you heard it, you want to listen to it again, just do a quick search on YouTube or a search engine. You will find the audio of everything that happened from the police scanner point of view. And we also have a little snippet from the air traffic controllers who say that they had shooters on the runway at one point during their broadcast. But the scanners on the police that the police have, you hear the phone calls, or at least the dispatcher saying, you know, we got reports of shots fired at the Luxor or at MGM, you know. And then you have specific information, you know, shooting team in the parking garage 2 of this hotel. So there were threats or there were calls coming in telling this information to law enforcement, whether it was out of confusion or intentionally to deceive law enforcement to keep them occupied. I believe it's the latter, because people, you don't just call in so specific of reports and nothing is verifiable in the end. And from what I could see, there was one shooting at a motel. I think it was some kind of domestic dispute. That was the only other accurate one, but it was unrelated to Las Vegas. And again, then you had the air traffic control audio where you had the people in Las Vegas airport saying there are shooters on the runway and we're working to clear them out. So there was, I agree with what you're saying, that this was an operation of some kind. Now, you've done extensive research into some of Stephen Paddock's connections that we covered on the show last time. Have you found any updates from when you were last on about Stephen Paddock, the guy in Provo, Utah, the prescriptions to ketamines, anything more on Paddock?
Yes, actually, I do have a little bit more on that. Let me, something popped in my head here. I'll go ahead and mention something that I have not put out yet in a video, but I'm going to in the next day or two. That's one more piece of evidence that something did happen there at the Bellagio. There are some of the hotels have got webcams that broadcast images every 15 minutes, 24 hours a day. You can go to these certain websites and go back and look at the history and just see what's happening, what it looks like. Well, I've got webcam, a site where if you go through, and I've done this, gone through minute by minute, or it's by quarter hour, for the day or two before and the day or two after October 1st, and this, again, this is a webcam inside the Bellagio. When you click the forward button to go to the next frame, which is the next 15 minutes, you go 10 o'clock, 10:15, 10:30, 10:45, 11, and then it skips the next two frames. There's half an hour missing from this footage. It's the only thing that's missing from this, what's supposed to be a public webcam archive. It's been deleted. And the next morning around 6 a.m., among what you do see in one of the frames are Las Vegas PD walking around in this area. So they were there all night. They weren't there just for a little while. But I'm going to be putting out more information about that. Just one more piece of the puzzle that helps to establish that the police themselves believed that there were multiple gunmen. But as far as the issue with Panaca and what happened there, so I have, over this last week, I've done a number of interviews with people that are very close to this story, including neighbors of the house that was bombed in Panaca, people who grew up with Adam Kachke. I've spoken with the hospital owner, or not the hospital owner, the hospital, I don't know if he's called a CEO, the head of the hospital, there at the time when this bombing happened. And so let me tell you how all this fits together. For those not familiar with the story, what I'm looking at in this investigation is, what was Stephen Paddock doing? I don't believe for one second that Stephen Paddock was just some guy who liked gambling for no reason at all in October 2016, went on a gun buying spree and started making plans for some mass shooting event. Sheriff Lombardo has acknowledged that. He had been saying previously that Stephen Paddock was just some guy who snapped. Well, there's an interview I watched last night of Sheriff Lombardo where he doesn't say that anymore. He's not saying he snapped. He's saying that he planned this out for a year, and that there were very likely other accomplices that helped plan it, which is a shift in what Lombardo has said in the past. But what was Paddock doing? My belief, based on what I've seen, rental car records, the activities, the movements of Paddock during these years, his ownership of various, I don't want to necessarily call them safe houses because it wasn't for him to hide himself, but these houses where he bought them in different locations had virtually no furniture in them, only spent a day or two there at a time, and he was storing weapons and bomb-making materials there. So this guy is involved in something. Among the evidence that we discussed last show was that Stephen Paddock co-owned a car with a man named Adam Kachke for a little while. And Adam Kachke was the owner of a pharmacy in a town called Caliente, Nevada. Caliente is about 10-15 minutes away from a smaller town called Panaca. Well, what Adam Kachke was doing was he was running an illegal, he was selling ketamine, which is a street name. The street name is Special K. It's kind of a hallucinogenic. They use it as a painkiller. Vets use it as an anesthetic. Other people use it at rave parties as either hallucinogenic or as a date rape drug. So he is making millions of dollars by selling it, also by double billing Medicaid and just reaping a fortune off this. For some reason, Stephen Paddock was in league with this guy. Stephen Paddock and he owned one car together for about 9 months before it was finally transferred into this guy named, this other guy's name. And then Stephen Paddock had a second car, which he also sold to, the pharmacy manager of Adam. Both of those, Adam Kachke and his pharmacy manager, are both sitting in prison right now because they were found guilty there, for their drug scheme. Paddock is tied to them. So, back in July of last year, in Panaca, this is a sleepy little town. Everybody knows everybody. Tiny little place. Caliente, Panaca, I mean, there's nothing there. You've got to drive about an hour and a half to St. George, Utah to get to the nearest, you know, real civilization other than some local mom and pop stores. These people are in the middle of nowhere. Despite that, back in July of 2016, there was this guy named Glenn Jones, a 59-year-old guy. He had been working as a nurse up until recent months at the local hospital in called Grover Dills. Well, he got fired from that job. I spoke with the man who fired him. He then went to Panaca, to the home of a couple of people who were also nurses at that hospital, Joshua and Tiffany Clough. Joshua was at work. Tiffany Clough was home with her three daughters. So this guy, Glenn Jones, drives up, pulls the car up to her house, bangs on the door, says, "I've got a bomb in my car. I'm going to blow up your house, and then I'm going to kill myself. If you want to live, get out of your house." So the woman grabs her three little girls, takes off running down the street. I've actually listened to the 911 call of her talking with the 911 dispatch, and you can hear the whole thing. She's terrified. She's saying, "I don't know what's going on." And while she's still talking, you hear this boom as the explosion goes off. What had happened was this Glenn Jones guy, who was from, he got his bomb making stuff down in Kingman, Arizona. He traveled up there, and for reasons that nobody publicly seems to understand, he went to this particular home. He took one bomb around to the backside of the house. He backed the car up with the other bomb, set them both off, and then, so the story goes, he then shot himself in the head. Actually, let me correct that. He shot himself before the two bombs went off. So it's very strange. What makes it extremely strange is that the local sheriff was basically kicked out of his own investigation. Las Vegas Metro sent, and there's a pretty good distance, but they sent a kind of an elite team over to help with the investigation because the FBI had taken over. The ATF was also involved in this investigation. About half a year later, the local sheriff, was so frustrated that he knew absolutely nothing about the investigation that he talked to the local newspapers and he told them, "I have repeatedly asked the FBI over and over and over for information on what happened here, and they won't tell me anything." He filed formal complaints, just couldn't get anything. So we've got the strange Panaca bombing. The next door neighbor was the brother of Adam Katschke, the neighbor. And I spoke with the neighbors who lived on the other side. The bomb was so big it sent a part of the car through the house, embedded into this guy's pickup truck. Really powerful. Well, this guy said that these Katschkes were into some bad stuff. And some of the other witnesses I spoke to said, yeah, while many of the Katschkes in this family, good people, very, very smart people, one son went to medical school, became a doctor, one became a pharmacist, went to pharmacy school. But this guy, Adam Katschke, some of them suspect that he was into something worse than just selling this ketamine. And so we've got Stephen Paddock linked not only to this Adam Katschke guy, to his pharmacy manager who was in on this scheme, and it's quite dirty. So I've been talking with these different neighbors. I've got my notes here. Let me see. I've got some more interviews set up actually with a few people, including, what can I say? Because I haven't spoken with them yet. Some people who are, you don't get any closer to Adam Katschke business-wise than the people that I'm interviewing next. What I'm getting from everyone is this. They do believe that there is more to the story than just this guy Adam Katschke was just a guy looking to make money somehow and making money off selling ketamine. These people believe that the government is somehow involved. And I don't mean like, you know, conspiracy theorists, oh, it's always the government. ATF has been in the community. The FBI has been in the community. Whatever that bombing was, they're hiding it from even the local law enforcement that should have jurisdiction there. They don't want it to come out. So what is the connection here between Stephen Paddock, his, whether it's drug running, maybe was he the source of the ketamine? Is he the guy who was bringing the ketamine from Mexico? Don't know. Was all we know is that there is sufficient evidence here to support the idea that Stephen Paddock was involved in something. He would fly somewhere, rent a car, drive back. Doesn't make sense. If this guy's a millionaire, what's he doing? I believe Stephen Paddock was getting his money from this criminal enterprise that he was involved in. Exactly what it was, my suspicions, but I don't have confirmations yet. So that's the direction of my investigation, right?
Well, you know, we have received really nothing from the mainstream media, from the police, from investigators on the ground, local media either. And that has left, you know, a hole of information that we are left to fill. Usually in scenarios like this, we did see his brother give a few interviews, but also his other brother, interestingly enough, was arrested for child pornography in a nursing home that was allegedly on his computer. We don't see, you know, old friends coming out, old acquaintances or coworkers. We don't have any detailed information about his past, just that he was a successful video poker player. The jobs that they do issue or list go back to, you know, when he was younger, the IRS and being a mailman. We know nothing really relevant about this guy's life, no social media presence. We don't know his likes, his dislikes, his political leanings. When we have this little of information, especially after the event was so massive and the coverage so massive as well, it's amazing to me that we have so little to go on. Even from the official investigation that the police conducted, we don't even have some of the basic details, and it took weeks and months just to learn that 1,000 shots were fired. And that is aggravating. And you've done a great work in the interviews and in your reporting of this. And I'm just curious as to, you know, what's it going to take for somebody else to come forward, or anybody to come forward and say, hey, you know, I knew Stephen Paddock, this is what was going on, and, you know, this is who we work for. I don't think we're ever going to see it, and maybe at least not right now or anytime soon. But, you know, thank God that there's people out there like you who are digging and continuing to look into this. But the more that time goes by and the more we don't have the information like this, I do lean towards some sort of government involvement, whether it was, and when I say government, I don't mean, you know, the Department of Defense. I'm talking about, you know, deep state kind of shadow, maybe contractors, or who knows what there's so many possibilities. But I agree that there was illegal activity here. There had to be, because you don't make millions of dollars playing video poker. If that were the case, I'd be rich. So,
no, you certainly don't. There's no way to make that kind of money. And even if you did make it, you're going to turn around and lose it rather quickly. I mean, that's otherwise the casinos are not going to make money. That's just, it's guaranteed. You're going to lose it. And if you don't lose it, then they'll get from you one way or another. That's Vegas. You know, remember, this is home of the mafia.
Yeah.
Just because they, little bit cleaner now how things are done, but it's still dirty and corrupt, and there's violence and there's murder, and there's you don't need Victor Corleone, you know, out there. We've got James Murin and others.
Jake, I want to slip one more in here and get your opinion on this. I was doing a little pre-show prep, and I pulled this piece from about 3 weeks ago from Fox News. Questions, sadness hang over Las Vegas weeks after the massacre. This from November 21st, FoxNews.com. In this probably 300-400 worder, it's a classic example of what I thought was the first little pile of debris that really started to smash through the original narratives that we were being told either by Special Agent in Charge Roos or by the sheriff or any of the deputies or underlings that were permitted to speak, at least in the early days of the investigation. Jake, what is your opinion on this? Why did the mainstream media all of a sudden push and promote and just blow up this narrative about Paddock's motivation? I've reviewed quite a bit of your work, Jake, and here at Team Hagman, you know, we study police procedural. We really try to get it right. We work with lots of law enforcement, really all over the world. Police procedural indicates that you gather evidence first and you figure out what happened, and then you worry about why it happened, or perhaps you do them in tandem, but you certainly don't place motivation first typically. Jake, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, it's absolutely right. Motive is almost always the last thing you figure out. You figure out what happened, and if you're lucky, you find out the motive. A lot of times you never do find out the, that's how it works. And even in the intelligence community, the FBI, a friend of mine who's in the FBI, I've talked with him, you know, just kind of shooting the breeze. What do you think about this? He's not involved in the Vegas investigation. He's in a different department. But, you know, I asked him, what do you think about all this, as far as his motive? And he said, we may never find out the motive. We can find out a whole lot, even if we solve the case, find all the, you know, people that may be involved in this. We can still not figure out the motive in the end. The motive certainly is the goal here, but, yeah, the mainstream media is just saying motive, 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 really pushing it. And what is so ironic is that they're the ones who are squelching any investigation outside of that very narrow, narrative. How can we have people coming forward talking about what really happened, what they saw, if they think that they're going to be completely mocked, not only by their, you know, friends or people in social media, trolls and such, but also the mainstream media, that's not going to want to interview them. You know, they shut down the investigation, the citizen, you know, the ability for citizens to look into this. And you can see, we've been told what the story is, and there's hardly any of us left still looking into the Las Vegas story. That's because it's been wrapped with a nice, neat bow, and everyone else has moved on, and that's the whole point of it. That's why the media does this. The media is their tools. Local media is better, but these national outlets, you know, I don't have to preach to you about it, but they do control the social narrative. Them combined with Google, Facebook, YouTube, you know, the platforms where they can control the way people think. By controlling what is allowed to be said.
Yeah, and we see, you know, all too familiar, especially with local news, it seems like they all work off maybe five different scripts, depending on what areas in the country they are, whether they're in the, you know, the Northeast or the Southwest. It might vary a little bit, but it seems like a lot of the local news stations do have, you know, maybe two or three organizations where they gather their news that's non-local stories about what they're going to talk about. And I always thought, when I watch my local news, to see how bad of a job they really do, anybody should be, anybody starting a TV show, you go to, in your local town, public access TV, and do a real, you know, in-depth half-hour news broadcast, and I guarantee it'll blow any local news out of the water anymore. They've turned into, like, morning talk shows, almost, with some of the
yeah.
stuff they show. But no, it's frustrating when you have an uncooperative police, and they've been hampered by the FBI, and then the FBI is not forthcoming, and you have this hush-hush around this case. I'm afraid that, you know, it's gonna take people like yourself and others to continue to dig into this before we have any major breakthroughs, because we're not gonna get those answers from law enforcement. We only have a few minutes left, Jake. Anything else that you're working on that's interesting? Any other investigations? I see you posted a video about the potential war between the U.S., Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Iran after Jerusalem was labeled the capital of Israel by Trump. But anything else that you're working on that's piqued your interest?
Well, I think we wouldn't have time to really get into it now, but it is true that we really are moving. It's going to happen. It's been in the works for years now. It's just a perpetuation of that. You know, a lot of people have heard that quote from General Wesley Clark after 9/11 when he visited the Pentagon, and one of his high-ranking sources there at the Pentagon came and told him, you won't believe this, but there's seven countries that we're planning on bombing. And he said, why? And they said, I don't know. Iran is one of them. We've already knocked off Afghanistan, Iraq. We've gotten Syria to an extent, at least the portion of it that's oil rich that we want. And now we're looking at Israel potentially going to war with Lebanon. And, of course, you've got Saudi Arabia going after Yemen. Anywhere that there is a Shiite presence that Iran is helping to fund, we're seeing this collaboration between the USA, Saudi Arabia, and Israel gradually working Iran more and more into a corner. President Trump pulled out of the Iran deal, which is not just about money. It's because part of it is because Iran was complying. They were never supposed to agree to that. The whole thing was supposed to be a big bluff, but surprisingly, they agreed to it and they've abided by it. And the U.S. government has had to certify that they've been compliant. It's only just by saying, you know what, in the spirit of it, we just think it's a bad deal, so it doesn't count. And it's funny because Rex Tillerson is out there right now saying, yeah, we expect that even though America has pulled out of the deal, Iran better keep complying with their end of it. How does that work?
Yeah.
You know?
That's interesting.
A one-sided deal. Yeah.
Jake, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Another fascinating hour. And we're going to continue to watch your videos. End Times News Report on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to his station, as he does tremendous work in putting out informative videos. And currently, Las Vegas has been the topic of discussion. Jake, thank you so much. I hope we can have you back on in the future.
Hey, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you. We'll be back with Alicia Powell on the other side after this break. Don't go anywhere on this Monday edition of the Hagmann Report.